Honorable Joss, can you close that door behind you? Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Is there a reply? Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. How are you? Okay. Now we've got a slightly different committee meeting members. It's not only us as members of parliament. We've got another committee, science and technology, that has joined us. I suppose they want to listen to the report of the Medicine Control Council. And I think it's important that we invited them because they work with innovations. Some of the things that concern us in health, innovations around medicine. We're called Medicine Control Council that registers those and looks at their safety and quality. So welcome, science and technology. You are part of us. But I would request Uma Mutunja to come and sit next to me. The chairperson phoned me and apologized that he wouldn't be here. So I want to ask Uma Mutunja to come and sit next to me. Otherwise, I will fall if I sit alone here. So I need somebody from science and technology with all the innovations to come and sit next to me. So Uma Mutunja, can you come and sit next to me? I'm told that you are the acting chair of the committee. So members, we are going to be listening. The only thing that we're going to be doing is just on the agenda, there's just one thing. It's about MCC, Medicine Control Council. I'm going to give over to you, MCC. I don't know who's going to do the presentation, whether it's the chairperson or the registrar. But before we go into that, can we introduce ourselves? As I said, there's two groups, there's two committees. It's health and science and technology. We'll have to tell everybody who we are. And I would be happy if somebody says, I'm from health, I'm from science and technology, so that we can know who is who. Okay, we'll start with you, Mr. Khaled.
Good morning. My name is Morosi Sakhali Desai. I'm from the portfolio of health. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Tandwe Kenye. I'm the member of the health portfolio committee. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Ali Desai. I'm a member of the health portfolio committee.
Good morning. I'm Mike Waters. I'm a member of the health committee.
Morning, Emma Mother Health.
Morning, my name is Lekheto, Committee of Health.
Peter Smith, Science Technology.
Morning, my name is Rebecca Makosha Musete, member of the Health Committee.
Tibela Bakaisu. Kipopi Muchumi, Lilokola Committee, ya Science, Kiswako Province ya Gauteng, Morijini ya Tswane, kia leboga.
Good morning, I'm Papi Khanare, Health.
We're organizing interpretation, but it's still coming.
I am Zintanja from Science and Portfolio Committee.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning, Chair. Oh. I'm Patrice Ngobo, Health Portfolio Committee, ex Science and Technology.
I do think that Chair will have to recall her back to Science and Technology. I'm Lindelwa Dunja from the African National Congress, a whip of Science and Technology. I'm coming from the province of the Eastern Cape.
I don't think we'll fight if you want her back. We'll have to put up a very big fight before she goes back, because otherwise she's here. there are other people that are here, but I don't think we really need to introduce them. But I need to introduce that there's somebody, Aziz Fredericks, who's from CSIR. I don't know where she's sitting. Aziza. Oh, Aziz is a male name, and Aziza is a female. I'm sorry, Aziza. So we've got Aziza from CSIR. Okay. Can if there's nothing, members, we'll go over and give over to MCC. I didn't tell you, who am I? Oh, I've forgotten. I'm getting old. You can imagine. I'm Vivian Kokwana. I'm co-chairing the meeting with Uma Mututu.
Sorry, Chairperson. There is Biyogazi, who is the secretary of the Committee of Health. There is Shanaz, who is the secretary of Science and Technology. Thank you. Are you a researcher? And there is the researcher for Science and Technology. And the Health Portfolio Committee researcher, Zubair.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and members of the two committees. It's a pleasure to be here today. And my name is Peter Eagles. I've been in the pharmacy world since I can remember. I think I studied and completed my initial studies in 1976. Then I completed a master's and a PhD. But I'm a pharmacist. And together with Ms. Heller, we serve on the MCC and probably have been doing that to close to 10 years now as chair. And I think our aim today is to enlighten those people who don't know about the MCC and what it does, and also perhaps if necessary, make a few suggestions about the future and what we, as members of council, see the MCC to be, what type of animal in the future. But as you know, that particularly as a sort of passage that has got to go through in Parliament, and I think it's been somewhere at the level of Cabinet for quite a while. But I think Ms. Heller maybe could give us some more information on that. So Ms. Heller will talk about the MCC, make a presentation, PowerPoint, and then the two of us will be willing to answer as much as possible any question that the members may have. So I've been in science since 74, basically, and so a lot of what we do at the MCC, is guided by clinical knowledge, by public health knowledge, and by scientific subject knowledge, and then, of course, all the professions themselves. So the MCC, the Registrar, can elaborate, but as you know, in the Medicines Act, there is indications of what type of expertise should be on the MCC. So that's quite detailed, although it's not totally inclusive, because there are still some gaps where no definitions are attached to those people who might serve as councillors, but probably around about half the council has descriptions, such as somebody who's an expert in pharmaceutical chemistry, somebody who's an expert in pharmacology, somebody who is a specialist doctor but has a speciality in whatever sphere, etc., etc. So that's where we are with respect to the 24 members of council. It's probably good to know at the outset that these people actually serve on a part-time basis, and we meet roughly every 6 to 8 weeks. But we have a secretariat of about 130 people, which Ms. Heller controls and manages as the registrar. And another fact that's also good to know is that the registrar, besides being the registrar to the council, is also a, I don't know what the terminology is now, but a cluster manager in my mind in pharmaceutical matters. It also has a new name which she could tell us about. So she also works essentially two jobs, and sometimes it's not always fair on her, because she has to basically then control two large sections of the health department as a chief director or cluster. So, Chair, thanks for that. I'll leave it at that. If there are any other questions, I could answer that, particularly maybe in the science and technology area, where I have been involved for probably 20-odd, 30 years looking at traditional medicines of plant origin and their use as medicines and characterization. You know, we've put out a few publications in this regard, so we're very keen on complementary medicine and African traditional medicine particularly, for which we, the Register will show you, but we have an expert committee at MCC, and we've had it for many, many years, but it has never been able to conclude on how we should register African traditional medicine, simply because in our minds, the Council for Traditional Health Practitioners has not been put in place. And so we didn't want to appear paternalistic to tell them already how they should manage their medicine, where they should look at scope of practice and actually input so that we don't get a disjointed system. So I'll leave it at that, Chair, and ask Ms. Ellis to introduce herself and make the presentation.
Thank you very much, Chair. Honorable members of the Portfolio Committee for Health and Portfolio Committee for Science and Technology. I would like to apologize to members. I have adapted three slides. The first one is the outline, where I went into more detail than what was sent out, but essentially the same things. And then we've added another slide that I will allude to when we get there. And I added a third slide that speaks about our current challenges, if the committee will allow me to do that. The outline will be looking at obligations and functions of the Medicines Control Council. We'll look at requirements for new medicines and generic medicines. We'll look a little bit on the management of clinical trials, which is a step in the development of medicines, starting from early stage research up to the time it gets to the mouth. It is registered from the data we get from the clinical trials. We have quite a huge amount of work that we do post-registration where there are amendments that we'll speak to. We'll also touch very briefly on pharmacovigilance and post-marketing surveillance, the restructuring of the MCC, and as I said, challenges. The obligations of the MCC and actually any other regulatory authority is public safety and protection through ensuring efficacy and quality of medicines throughout their life cycle. And I would like members to emphasize that we do this oversight throughout the life cycle of the medicine. Some people may have seen on television yesterday where there was a court case around a particular medicine that has been registered for ages in this country, and we continued overseeing its safety. And there were concerns, hence we went to court with the applicant. That just illustrates that we do that throughout the life cycle of the medicine. Then risk assessment with the aim of minimizing harm and maximizing benefit. Timely access to medicines and timely action on safety and quality. Transparency and accountability, I'll speak to that a little later. Responsiveness to emerging needs and the capacity to regulate. The WHO, the World Health Organization, has put these principles that decisions of any regulatory authority should be based on scientific evidence and facts. Any regulatory authority must have practicable enforcement capacity. Accountability and public interest or public good is one of the mainstays of any regulatory authority. There should be safeguards against conflict of interest, because we use experts in a regulatory authority that might also be used by the industry or researchers or anybody else. So if there is that kind of thing, the conflict or potential conflict must be declared so that we can manage it, and decisions are not biased in any way. So we do that as well. Limit discretionary powers. Good regulatory practices and standards. And we do this in the MCC. The guidelines and the standards that we use, we derive from the International Conference on Harmonization, which is the ICH in short, which is a global body that develops standards And also we use some standards from the WHO, World Health Organization, and we adapt those where there is need to South African conditions. And then independence from public, commercial, and political pressure. Our functions are registration of medicines based on quality, efficacy, and safety. We manage post-marketing amendments. We approve and monitor clinical trials. We monitor safety throughout the life cycle, as I have said. We respond to signals that are emerging. We also license manufacturers, wholesalers, and distributors. The point here is that it would make no sense to make sure that the medicine at entry is safe, efficacious, and of good quality. And on the other hand, we do not look after the whole entire value chain going down the line. So we license these people so that we still have control of the product. And lastly, provision of information. And this information is tailor-made for the providers, for the manufacturers, for the prescribers, and for the public at large. The Medicines Control Council works through a number of expert committees. How we regulate medicine as defined in the Medicines Act is that the Medicines Control Council, which the chairperson has alluded to, has 24 members. And then the Medicines Control Council, in terms of the Act, can appoint expert committees that are going to help it do its work. And then we appoint those experts, and each committee has a chairperson, and each committee peer reviews each evaluator's work. We receive a dossier, it's assigned to an evaluator or a group of evaluators, they evaluate, then it is peer reviewed at each expert committee. And the committees we have are the Pharmaceutical and Analytical Committee that looks at chemistry basically and quality. Then we have a Biological Medicines Committee that's the vaccines and biotherapies. Then we have a committee named the Names and Scheduling Committee. This one looks at whether the name is appropriate or is intended to convey a message that is misleading to the public. Say, for instance, you say a medicine is Uzifozonke, and you put that as a trade name. It cannot be, because that's misleading to the public, and therefore the MCC will say, no, choose another name. Or you choose a name that is very similar to an existing medicine. Let's say we have a medicine that is called a tripler that is already registered, and you come up with a medicine that is called a trisa. Then the MCC would say, no, that is going to be confusing, because firstly, the member of the public will not know when they go to the pharmacy to buy the medicine. Secondly, the person that dispenses the medicine may be confused. So we look after those things and make sure that the names are very distinct and are not confusing. We register human and animal medicines, and therefore we do have a committee that looks after the animal medicines, which is the veterinary clinical committee. We have a new committee, telling you, the last time I presented to committee, we didn't have this committee. It's the legal committee that looks after the legal issues, because it's we regulate a fairly sophisticated industry, and there's often disagreements in terms of law, and it was felt that we needed this committee. Then we have a complementary medicines committee. What do I mean by complementary medicines? It's all the alternative and complementary medicines. It's a foreign, if I may call them that, foreign traditional medicine, Ayurveda, Unanity, Chinese medicine, reflexology, and so on. That is that group. But we felt we needed an African traditional medicines committee, which the chair alluded to, that would specifically look at indigenous traditional medicines. And that committee, and the reason it was thought we needed a separate committee was to make sure that we focus early on in the development and innovation around this area, because there's a great interest in the country in terms of developing this area, in fact, in the continent. Then we have a clinical trials committee. That's self-explanatory. This is the committee that approves and monitors clinical trials. Then we have a clinical committee that looks at safety and efficacy primarily, pharmacovigilance, that's post-marketing surveillance and making sure, and safety signals and making sure we respond. There's a new committee that we are establishing. That's why I put it in yellow. It's the biotherapeutic committee. We haven't established firmly yet. We're in the process of establishing it. The reason being that the future of therapeutics is in biotherapy, and therefore we need to be ready to do that. And we started receiving a few applications around that, but the whole world is moving this direction. Now, I will go quickly to describe how we register new chemical entities, and the new term now is new chemical medicine. The development of a drug starts with the identification of potential drug candidates. That's still when we're looking at chemicals, and I'm sure the honorable members from science and technology are fairly conversant with this side. Then there's preclinical development to determine the safety profile in vitro and in vivo, that is in animals or in a simulated a laboratory situation. Toxicity studies include organs targeted by the drug at this stage, and we look at any long carcinogenic effects, toxic effects on mammalian reproduction. This is very important so that we don't have another thalidomide disaster. And then the choice of animal species based on which one will give the best correlation to human trials. This preclinical stage, the MCC is not involved with, but the data that comes out of the preclinical stage we do look at because it informs us as we carry on the work. And then we start getting involved from the phase one trials. A sample of 20 to 80 participants, usually healthy individuals, to determine metabolic and pharmacological actions and the maximally tolerated dose. And then factors to be identified here is bioavailability. How is this drug absorbed into the body and the target organ? Dose proportionality, metabolism, how is it distributed in the body, how fast is it released? That's what pharmacokinetics says. And at the data focus here, are the vital signs, the blood pressures, and so on. Then we look at plasma and serum levels of the drug, and we look at any adverse events that already emanate at that stage. And the duration of this stage is usually up to 1 month, and it's few individuals, generally healthy young individuals. Then phase two of the trial demands a bigger sample size of 200 to 300 participants, and this one is to evaluate effectiveness of the drug, determine the short-term side effects, and we're saying short-term side effects because it's a short duration study, but those that are serious will already emanate at that stage. Identify common risks for a specific population and disease. And the factors that are identified at this stage are bioavailability, drug disease interaction, and then you start titrating the dose at that stage to see at what is the dose range that is feasible, and the pharmacodynamics, how it's distributed, pharmacokinetics, the fastness of release, as well as elimination of the drug. Will it be eliminated through the liver? Will it be the kidneys primarily? What exactly will it be so that we look at the safety for each and every stage where the drug is distributed and how long it lasts before it is completely eliminated. And the data focus here is dose response and tolerance, adverse events, and efficacy. And the design of this study usually is a placebo-controlled or active-controlled comparison. What do I mean by that? We'll give the patient a placebo, something that is inert, and we will give another similar group of patients, similar number generally, the active, so that we can compare how the drug acts. Where we control with an active entity is where it would probably be unethical to expose people to a placebo when you know that there is a standard treatment that has already been established, and then you can compare what we know with what we don't know, the new drug, and see how it goes. And the population is individuals with target disease, which is why oftentimes it is unethical to expose those people to a placebo because they need treatment anyway. And then we have well-defined entry criteria. There are exclusions, maybe babies, children, pregnant women, people with multiple illnesses, and so on. And the duration is several months. We do this to filter out any confounding factor. And then we have phase three. This is to obtain additional information about the effectiveness of clinical outcomes. And we now, this is not my computer. I don't know what to do. Wait. I'm sorry about that. Thank you. We obtain additional information about the effectiveness of clinical outcomes, and we evaluate the overall risk-benefit ratio in a demographically diverse sample. Remember, at phase two, we took a small group and we filtered out a lot of people. Now we try to simulate real life as much as possible, but there are still exclusions because it's a trial. And the data focus is laboratory data, efficacy, and adverse events. And the factors that we identify at that stage are drug-disease interactions, drug-to-drug interactions, the dosage intervals, the risk-benefit information, efficacy, and safety for even subgroups. Here we look at, say, can this drug work on teenagers? And what would be the dose and what would be the safeguards? Can it work in the elderly? What are the implications? If in a society like ours we have a high incidence or prevalence of HIV, what will be the impact if somebody takes antiretrovirals? These are the kinds of things that we look at this stage. And I must emphasize, this regulatory authority must look at its own population and its own risk for that population. We also look at if there's drug-food interactions, what is it that we eat as South Africans? Then the design is a randomized, controlled, 2-3 arms, and it's got broader eligibility criteria compared to the other two. And the population is the individuals with target disease, and normally you have hundreds to thousands of participants for this stage, and it normally lasts for several years. In fact, the trend now is to have multi-centered, in many countries, trials. And they'll have a trial in South Africa, they'll have a trial in North America, Australia, and so on, and all that data is pooled. Then, if there are any signals that we pick up in any of the diverse populations, then we look at that at the next stage. Actually, then we register on the basis of this information that we get out of phase three. But if there's anything amiss, maybe you have seen in the packaging set where you have a box warning, we put a box in the packaging set that says beware of A, B, C, D, and D. These are the contraindications of the drug. Take care if it is used in a particular population, the elderly or people with liver disorders or with kidney disorders and so on. And in fact, we do what we call a patient information leaflet at the MCC. That is targeting the patient, and it's written in simpler language than the packaging set. However, we have a challenge with that one in that it is not as widely distributed as it should be. The Act says the patient information leaflet should be distributed at the point of service, and it should be in a language that an ordinary person will understand. But what we find is that we do approve the patient information leaflet as a matter of must. Each supplier, manufacturer, that we register a product, they of must supply a patient information leaflet that we will approve. But in the market, we find that there are other things. And we are hoping with the Consumer Protection Act and with both forces, we've started talking to each other, we might have a little bit of enforcement capacity. The excuse that we have been given by industry for this one is that we have 11 official languages and it is expensive and what and what. We believe as the MCC we can find ways to address this if we all serious. Then there's a phase four part of a trial, which is post-registration. Now, remember, members, that when you do a clinical trial, it's a controlled environment. People report every so many weeks. We check them. We make sure that the medicine is taken. We watch out for anything that's coming out. Phase four now is gone to everybody. There are no exclusion criteria at all. And the doctor will prescribe, and it goes to the general population fully. Now, there may be a few things that we have identified during as potential risk during the evaluation from information. And at this stage, we can ask a company to do a risk management plan and look specifically at particular areas. We had had a few studies, mainly on some biotherapies that are relatively new, where the company has to report to the MCC on certain signals that we would like to follow up. And we've had a couple looking specifically of what the impact of this particular medicine is going to be on people that are taking antiretrovirals, which is prevalent in our country. But this is the trend. And then we at this stage, the aim is to identify some epidemiological data. What does it do in our particular epidemiological patterns? The efficacy and safety within a large diverse population. It also has an impact on pharmacoeconomics, where you determine whether a drug is really superior to what is already obtaining, and whether there is benefit. It usually works where there's national health insurances and stuff. Whether drug B, which is new, interpreted to be better than drug C, which we have already registered. Is it really superior, or is it just marketing gimmicks? And that's the stage at which we look at those issues. We may discover some more adverse events that relate to our own epidemiology. And the weakness with this one is that it is uncontrolled and observational, but which is fine because it's the population in general. Now, once we pick up from, and this is linked to the pharmacovigilance, once we pick up at this stage that there are things that we're not quite comfortable with, then we can do a focus study on that particular element. Then we demand that the manufacturer does a focus study so that we can flesh out whatever suspicions there are around that particular area in a particular environment with particular epidemiological patterns. And the population is obviously individuals with the target disease. And there may be inclusion of new age groups once it goes to the population, because generally we don't want young people, usually it's young adults. Then will it work on teenagers at what dosages? Will it work with all genders? What is it going to do to pregnant women? All those issues that obtain in a general population. Now, I will quickly go through how we evaluate generics. Generics, we don't go to a clinical trial. Maybe let me explain what is a generic. A generic is a drug that has the same active molecule, active pharmaceutical ingredient as the innovator. After the patent falls, generic companies may copy that molecule and prepare a preparation and sell it. And that is a generic. And in this country, we have pro-generic policies. And therefore, it wouldn't make sense, in fact, it wouldn't be ethical to expose people to clinical trials again. So what we demand is that the manufacturer, the applicant, gives us a comparative data with the innovator that we know. They will buy it and do all the tests and give us data that shows us that in a smaller group of patients, which is about 10 to 15, that this thing works exactly like the innovator, that the absorption is exactly like the innovator, that the elimination is exactly like in the innovator, and we look at issues of stability. We look at all those issues that relate to what excipients are they using. An excipient is, if we make a tablet and we put the active, it's very small, then we put starch and sugar and many other things to make the tablet and compress it and make sure that it dissolves in your stomach as quickly as possible. And then we look at whether the excipients that the generic manufacturers bring are not going to interfere with that defined period within which the drug must be absorbed and eliminated. And also we look at impurities in their own active pharmaceutical ingredient, because obviously impurities have an impact on stability. They may have an impact on safety. So we look at all those things, but we don't go back to clinical trials. Therefore, we compare the chemical equivalence with the innovator drug, stability and proportional similarity at different strengths. with the innovator. And as I said, they have to do a bioequivalent study on fewer individuals, maybe 10 to 15. And then we also check whether the protocol is sound for the bioequivalent study. Now, quality applies to all evaluations. We look at active pharmaceutical ingredients. I've already spoken to that. We look at the manufacturing method, especially with generics, because we would have checked the manufacturing method at the time we evaluate the innovator. Now, the manufacturing method of the generic company may be different, so we have to look at whether there are any risks and whether it is sound. Then we look at good manufacturing practice standards. We have inspectors that will go and look whether good manufacturing standards, as per South African good manufacturing practice guidelines, whether they adhere to. And we can suspend the license of the manufacturer, we can ban it, we can do whatever if they are not adhering to good manufacturing standards. Then we look at the specifications for the final product, we look at the container suitability, stability for shelf life determination, then we will say whether it's 2 years or 3 years or whatever the data tells us is a suitable shelf life. Now, the pillars of quality, at pre-registration, we look at all these things that I have mentioned, the GCP inspections, validation of the batches that they are doing, that each batch is constant, there are no changes as they are doing batches. This is before we register. And for clinical trials, we also do good clinical practice inspections to make sure that they stick to the guidelines, and therefore we derive data that is of integrity. Then the manufacturing license, we insist that they, in South African law, there's a responsible pharmacist. That's the person we're going to hold accountable. Whenever we go there and things go wrong, we will say, you will account. And whenever a manufacturer changes that person, they must tell us. And this person is registered as a responsible pharmacist, also with the Pharmacy Council, the South African Pharmacy Council, which is the body that controls professionals. And therefore, we have a double control mechanism, where if this person violates our prescription, then the Pharmacy Council will also take action against the individual. So these are safeguards that we have. Then people have to be GMP compliant, and this must be a natural person. Then we issue GMP certificates, and we reevaluate every manufacturer after every 5 years to see, or whenever we get a story from the public or from wherever that things are not going right at a particular company, we'll go and inspect. Or when people report that they have found a mix-up, they found the wrong tablet in a bottle, then we investigate what happened there. Then after registration, there's still GMP inspections, as I said. And then if there's anything amiss, there's probably when they were packing, they put the wrong label or whatever, we do recall. And I'm sure you have seen in the newspapers or in sometimes on TV, where it says such and such a medicine is being recalled, please contact your health practitioner or whatever and return the medicines. That's what that recall is. And then we also control how people advertise. In terms of South African law, anything that is sold on prescription is not supposed, or in a pharmacy behind the counter, is not supposed to be advertised to the public. But sometimes people take chances and we will act. And then we also do periodic quality control testing if we suspect there are issues that we need to be looking at. We'll pick up samples in the market and put them into the laboratories and take action if anything is not right. We did this about 2 years ago with 6 dose combination TB products, where we found there were formulation problems, and we tested everything, and we asked manufacturers to make good. A lot of products were withdrawn and deregistered. People went to fix certain things, and that's what we do post-registration. Now, quickly, I would like to go to the management of clinical trials. no clinical trial may commence before approval by the Medicines Control Council and the local ethics committee. We don't do the ethics side as the MCC, but we insist that you bring us approval from your local ethics committee so that we are sure that they are sure that everything that is happening there is ethical. All local ethics committees are registered with the National Health Research Council. They oversee the local ethics committees and make sure that standards are adhered to. And the universal principles of autonomy, beneficence, and justice must be respected. And the MCC has authority to terminate a clinical trial for reasons of safety or where there is evidence of good clinical practice violations. And the key aspects for clinical trial approval is that there must be scientific rationale, patients must be assured of safety, reasonable safety, that the clinical trial is contributing to new scientific knowledge, and it's not just curiosity, it must be contributing to scientific knowledge so that we don't subject participants to some frivolous study. And we also look at whether the trial is ethical, relevant, and can patient safety be assured, whether the trial is undertaken in South Africa, whether the subjects will benefit from such a study. If people want to do a trial in South Africa for a condition that we do not have, we would say no. Why would it be done in South Africa if it is not going to have an impact in our own population? We would be exposing people to additional risk for no benefit for us. What do we mean by a scientific rationale? Does the trial contribute to new scientific knowledge, as I have said? Is it plausible? Is the hypothesis plausible and scientifically appropriate? Is the study design optimal? Should the trial be conducted in South Africa, as I've already alluded to? And is there adequate preclinical evidence of safety and efficacy? That other slide that I talked to on preclinical work. And then on the safety side, the balance of risk versus benefits. As I said, honorable members, we register medicine on the basis of a positive benefit-risk ratio. If the risks are higher, we would not than the benefits, we would not register that medicine. Is there adequate data from the preclinical studies? Are the animal models used appropriate? Remember, I spoke about which kind of mammal that closely resembles the human body, so that we are sure that we pick up signals. Is there adequate monitoring in place? And then we do pharmacovigilance and good clinical practice inspection reports, and is safety stipulated as an objective in the application? Now, I did say in earlier that we do some post-marketing phase after we have given registration. We monitor safety throughout, we do market surveillance, we do laboratory testing, we check good manufacturing practice compliance, we check good clinical practice compliance, and we do variations post-registration. There are lots of variations. For instance, companies will say, this particular drug is going to be good for cancer of the lungs, let's say, for an example. Then they go and do further research and come back and say, actually, it can work on ovarian cancer or whatever. Then they must bring data that demonstrates that. These are what we call additional and new indications, and it may be completely different from the original indication. And then we will evaluate the data, again, clinical trial data, and approve the new indication if it warrants approval. Then people will change the source and method of synthesis of the active pharmaceutical ingredients, the excipients, the packaging. We check all of that. People often change the source of the active pharmaceutical ingredient in synthesis, and there's nothing wrong with that, because as science develops, scientists may discover that this was too long a method originally that was used to synthesize a particular molecule. If they have found a more efficient method of doing the same molecule, that's okay, but we check. Then we also, and if you're changing the packaging, we have to make sure that the packaging does not interfere with the integrity of the product. And oftentimes people will change the packer, the laboratory release, which laboratory will release the product. product, the packaging, the address of the manufacturer, the manufacturing site, and so on. All those things are amendments that we have to approve so that at any stage we know where you are sitting as the applicant that we are overseeing. Maybe let me explain also around this laboratory release, honorable members. When we import medicines, like we will register and it is manufactured in India, for instance, and when it is brought into the country, we insist that that particular, those batches are tested in a laboratory that is accredited and licensed by the MCC in this country before it is released to the market. And oftentimes, people will use one laboratory and then apply. We want to use laboratory number two as a foil safe in case things are not fast enough in the first laboratory, and we will approve that if they meet standards. This is just a summary slide of what we do. On the left-hand side of the slide, that's where the application comes in, then the pre-marketing phase, the product evaluation, quality, safety, and efficacy, and the licensing of the facilities, all the things I've spoken about. And on the post-marketing side, on the right-hand side, you can see a schematic diagram of all the things we do up to approval. Marketing authorization is registration in our terms, and this slide was borrowed from the World Health Organization, but that's exactly how we work. Now, quickly, I can go to progress. What have we registered and really rejected over the last 3 years? In 2008-09, we registered a total of 541. 910748. I've put this in terms of our financial year. That's why I'm putting 910 from the 1st of April to the end of March. 1011970, and up to today we have 411. You will see that there was a spike 0910 and very good work 1011. This is the time we had the backlog project, which was 2009 July to September 2010, and that's part of that work that is still spilling over because it takes time to go through that work. And progress on clinical trials, this is the new slide that I apologize to members, it's not in your package. I just thought it would be of interest to edit that in 2009 we received 212 applications for clinical trials. All of them have been evaluated and finished. 2010, there are still six that is pending. And oftentimes it's when we ask for information from the applicant and they still go and regenerate whatever we've asked for. For 2011, we've received this far 254, and two of those, where you see notification, which is not there, that's a phase four trial, what I've just described, post-registration trial to look at certain things. And then we have already approved 154, and 93 are still pending. Three were rejected, two were withdrawn by the applicant. This is the other slide that I added with your permission, honorable members. We have not cleared the backlog, though there is progress. If we recall, at the time we started the backlog project, we had a total of 2,840 plus minus of items that were in the backlog. Currently, we have 1,500 that are still in process. There is progress, but not sufficient. We are the first ones to admit that 1,500 should be cleared as soon as possible. And then we had said to the House the last time we presented that we will try and build the in-house capacity. This has been slow as well. Also, we have an aging expert pool. We find it very, very difficult to attract young scientists. And the few young scientists that we have, both at committee level and in the secretariat, once they know what is it that we are doing and get a little bit of experience, they jump to the industry, which pays better. And then the timeline, and also our public sector salaries are not that attractive. Primary sector that makes them jump is salary. The much as we have improved our timelines to priority conditions. For instance, most of the ARVs we have received, we do within 12, 13 months. Newer complex technologies will require a new skill set and new methods. As I said, biotechnologies are the order of the day. They are complex molecules that are in the pipeline of manufacturers, fairly deep molecules, not the smaller chemicals that we use to, and this is going to demand additional skills. In fact, there are discussions as to whether we shouldn't be bringing in engineers and mathematicians to deal with the modeling side, which is their bread and butter, which is not part of our traditional skill base, but there's talk on how we address this. And the other challenge that we have is the communication. We are not the only ones here, but I think we could improve. Because we put all information on websites. When there's a safety signal, we send it to newspapers. Now, the question we're asking ourselves is, do people that are losing in Ngqongqo or in Hlabisa, will they get to that newspaper? Because by and large, it's an English newspaper or African newspaper, and we've put it on a website. How many ordinary South Africans have access to those things? So we need to improve on that as well. Now, on the restructuring of the MCC, as the chair has mentioned, this week the minister is taking some work to cabinet, and therefore if members of the portfolio committees allow me, I would like not to talk about the restructuring of the MCC until the cabinet processes are filed, the outcome is very clear, and then if the committee wants, the committee can still approach minister, and I'm sure we will gladly come and address the committee. I would like to speak on something that there is a meeting this week where minister is taking something.
But, I mean, what Ms. Heller has mentioned is exactly what restructuring will try and obviate. You know, poor communication, lack of human resources, lack of retention processes for people who work within the MCC. Also, the level of expertise vis-a-vis those people who work at universities versus those who work in the MRA. And it's quite interesting that the salary issue, because we often as academics who mostly fill the council and the committees often see relatively junior people earning much more than professors do at universities. And it's just odd for us, not that we're in the academia for the money. You know, we always say that, but cost of living, etc., does come into play. So what we see principally with a new organization is to see efficiency, better human resource management, and also better financial use of the fees that we get and of the budget that we get. As you know, we are still part of the Department of Health budget. But we don't see that this is the best way forward for an authority who will still in our minds report to the minister and to parliament, obviously. It's not an independent future that we see. But essentially, in my mind, it's an organization that operates like a real top-class company. And it's then an authority with the minister's involvement. But it also essentially looks after its own finances, hires and fires people relative to whatever the circumstances are for those, and essentially does better work and allows people to advance a little bit better. You know, if you work 5 to 10 years in an organization, you personally want to improve. You want to be known as the best in your field. And we see people don't have that as part of their long-term plans. They're very short-term. Even people we send overseas to be trained, they come back and you're lucky if they last 2 years. Then they are gone, and you know, we as a country then have invested in these experts, and we don't
independent of everything else in the country, but something that reports to the minister, basically, which is the current situation. And I just want to say for the record that never, ever has the MCC been influenced by a minister of health from the time of the start of the new democracy at all. So thanks for that, Chair.
Just to finalize, there are, however, three sets of regulations that have been published for comment, the complementary and alternative medicines, the medical devices and in vitro diagnostics, and there's some food regulations that have been published for comment. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, That was a very good report. I don't think the last time that we were here, you did it as well as you did it today, trying to open our eyes. But you know, sometimes you always ask yourself, shouldn't we call the Department of Health the Department of Medicine? Because basically it's all about medicines, and even the budget that is there goes to medicines. So this is a very important area that we need. One obviously would have liked to hear more about the ethics. I know it's not with you, but I mean, when you're talking about people that are going to be given a drug that is not known what it does, and if things become very bad, do they get compensated? For example, if I can make an example, if you give me a drug that is supposed to protect me against HIV and AIDS, and you allow me to sleep around, and I get HIV and AIDS, while I'm taking that drug, what is going to happen to me after? But I know it's not your area, but probably later on we need to call that committee or that council that is in the ethics to come forth. So sometimes when you talk about a drug, it's different substances that you bring together. And some people, they react to certain things that are used to bring those drugs together. And if I'm listening to you clearly, you're just talking about the actual drug that is tested. But you don't talk about the substance that is used to bring the drug together. In fact, another good example, if I drink Coke, I'm drinking Coke because it's Coke, but there's some benzoic acid that is there. And some people are reacting to that benzoic acid. Not only that they might be reacting, there are other things that probably might be happening. And having said this is a huge area, and while you ask yourself, you see, you are only two, it's the chairperson and the register here, because the other people are part-time. Are we not, I think the last time that we were here, we said there needs to be data, but we're very happy that there's some progress in that restructuring, because we don't think it's something that needs to be done by a few people, because it's a huge area. And you're competing with an industry that is very huge and is very well developed. Probably when we get to that area where we have to see that transformation or restructuring, it would be good. So we will be looking forward to that one so that we can see. And obviously, at this time and moment, you are getting your money from, you are charging people, but that money doesn't come to you to do your work. It goes somewhere else. And you are not totally independent. So we are open to a lot of interference that could happen in the process. So we are happy that members, that is the presentation, and obviously we are going to be coming up. Because there are people that came a little bit late. Welcome, Matuwe. I'm not sure about those who are coming from Science and Technology, whether they are the members or there are people who came late. I'm not sure whether they are members who came late from Science and Technology. But if they are there, welcome members from Science and Technology, because I don't know them that well. Okay. Maybe before you respond to this, what I'm saying, I'm just commenting. Mine are just comments. The questions are going to be coming from members. You'll pardon me, because I'll have to memorize the members from Science and Technology, but we'll just wait. I've seen your hand. Oh, I see everybody from health. Okay, let's start with you, and then we'll go over.
Thanks, Chair. My name is Smith. I'm from Science Technology, so I don't know much about health. My
questions may be a bit inappropriate, not having had the benefit of knowing what you guys really, how you operate. But having seen your challenges and being aware, obviously, of the importance of maintaining certain standards, how do you, I mean, I'm just thinking in terms of things like KPIs and targets and performance indicators, do you have such things internally to deal with fast-tracking, say? I mean, you have a backlog, a huge backlog. Do you have stipulated time frames within which things should happen? Are you able to transform your practices so that so you're, you know, more efficient? You mentioned that you're fast-tracking certain approval of certain drugs, and you referred, for example, to 12, 13 months in the case of certain local ones. Is that a good time frame? I mean, I've got actually no idea. I know if you hear about drugs in the States taking donkey's years to get approved, so it would seem fairly fast to me, but that's fine for a local drug. What is the process for a foreign drug that's been... If you, for example, have a drug that's been approved by the FDA and a whole lot of European countries, etc., come here, do you start the process de novo? There was a throwaway line that said something about if a drug was made in India and it comes here, it's got to go to lab tests. But is that the process? Is that kind of it? It just gets verified by lab tests and then it's available, or do you repeat a lot of stuff? I was quite curious to know the extent to which the processes you set out here apply or don't apply to indigenous medicines. To what extent would anybody have to comply with any of these requirements, or are they separate requirements totally? And then finally, I'm thinking, you know, in terms of your skills, your backlogs and so on, you've made reference to people that you employ, you send to the States or Europe, and then in 2 years they're gone. You know, can you not have sort of restraint of trade agreements? Can you not have contractual arrangements with them that to repay their costs if they do that kind of thing? Or is there any way to enhance, you know, people staying with you?
Thank you, Honourable Smith. We'll ask you, we'll ask all your Honourable Smith to put your question there, and then we'll ask who she will be the last one on the science and technology side, and then we'll go to him. Okay. Honourable Smith. Thank you.
time order for the pieces 004 file with the number applicable to the pieces 008 file, and so that I might be a specific permission from the Minister of Health for a specific area, and that should be allowed. Now, in the United States, we were taking 38 days, so far it's taken here a year. There's no new chemistry, basically the same people, the same process is being followed. Can you please explain why? Because it's a critical issue. It's a world-renowned scientific team with world financial backing, with international approval, all sorts of things. Due to every state of the country, it would possibly be why the NCC is not stored on the front.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Member.
Thanks, Chairperson, and my thanks also goes to the presenter. My third question has been covered with regard to Capriza 007, the registration thereof. My colleague has covered that question. I'm not going to repeat it. The question, you identified six challenges ahead of. Unfortunately, I do not have the slide with me, but you identified six challenges. But what I find lacking there are the mechanisms, or is the mechanism to address those challenges. The coming back again, mentioning the challenges because you do not have any strategy to address those challenges. So I would like to find out what are the strategies, or what is your strategy to address the identified challenges. The other question you mentioned under phase three with regard to the trial duration, you mentioned there that would take several years. And I sit here asking myself, I even ask my question, how several is several years? To me, several is quite relative. Exactly how many years do you take? Because several years can mean 10 years, several years can mean 2 years. So how several is several? That's what I want to understand maybe. The other thing that I picked up in your presentation is on slide, I didn't write the slide number, but it's with regard to the establishment of the therapeutic committee, biotherapeutic committee. You said that is in the process of being established. I believe that as a unit, as an entity, as a department, you have to have specific time frames so that as the oversight committees, we are able to hold you accountable that you promise to have done this by this year or by this period, and you haven't done it. So I would request that maybe you be specific on when would that committee be established, the biotherapeutic committee. I think those are... And the other one is with regard to... I think the slide is not paginated. It's not numbered. But I think it's supposed to be slide 16, which talks about key aspects for clinical trial approval. You indicated that if the trial is undertaken in South Africa, then the subject should benefit from the results of the trial. And I'm asking myself that I was watching a Third Degree 2 weeks ago where I saw that child who had that disease, I forgot what is it called, where a child of 9 years, her genes are of a 60-year-old. I forgot the progeny something. And the child was taken overseas for clinical trials. And I would like to know what or to what extent does MCC, that Medicines Control Committee, get involved in such instances where a person gets taken from South Africa to be... What? A subject or what? In in another country, you have to be a participant in another country. What role do you play as a council in such a situation? Thanks.
So thank you. My co-chair is going to be asking questions. I'm hoping that you'll be jotting them down. Members, I want us to be at the back of our minds, though it came at the last time, that they are restructuring their organization. And I think we should keep it at the back of our minds that there's this restructuring.
Thank you, Chair, honorable members, and thank you for a more detailed response. Let me then start with the last point. I think I've been covered by Honorable Shin on the very important project that we were part of on our oversight. And when challenges were outlined, we were a bit, some of us, taken aback. But with the restructuring, the challenge that I'm now having is the explanation by the lady that now this is going to be taken to cabinet, and because of that, going to be unable to speak on the issue of the restructuring. But my question for me is that some of you are part time, and that you have got multiple responsibilities, if I may say. Is it not one of the factors that are what you think of restructuring, but also that it has delayed your work for some years? Why only think about restructuring now? You'll have to. Because I'm raising that linked with my second question, which is something very close to my heart, the issue of traditional medicine. Traditional medicines have been with us for years, and our people, majority of our people, are depending on them. Whether we like it or not, they do go and consult, and they go. And why is it that it has taken it years? Is it because it's traditional medicine? People of your caliber, and pardon me, Chair, I'll have to be frank and blunt here. People of your caliber think that well, that's not important. What is important is Western medicine, and we are told some of us are not trained in it. But we know for sure that some of the Western medicines are the ingredients, if I can say that, are from that medicine. But why has it taken you years to? Because I don't pick that up. I only hear you saying that it has taken you years. The second thing, this my third question is, how that you are part-time, how do you manage the, let me make an example. You know that they, when the artist lost a CD, make an example, there is what is called the people that make a yes. How confident are you that that is not happening in the field of how confident are you in the influx of what is happening in this country, that there are medicines that are coming in, nobody knows how they are being controlled, whether they are being registered, they are sold on streets and for crying out aloud, our people are buying that. How confident are you that you are able, you have got the ability and the capacity to communicate with the enforcement, with law enforcement agencies in keeping that? Because that is what we are faced with in South Africa. Let me make an example. You will find it in every corner there is safe abortion. And we were told by the Minister of Health in one of the meetings that we attended that there is I've forgotten the name of the tablet that is being used by the foreign nationals in inducing labor. Exactly. Is that off the counter?
is it your responsibility to ensure that that is taken off the counter? And again, the question is your communication with the law enforcement agencies on that. And in the phase four of your post-registration, there is aim to monitor ongoing safety in large population. How do you ensure that you are going to do, it's your aim of monitoring, but it goes back to you are part-time, and is the restructuring going to be able? I think the question that has been put by the Honorable Muchumi, is your restructuring really going to be able to ensure that all some of the issues that are being raised, and you will pardon us, some of us are not well versed in your area, but some of us are, we are public representatives, we're former health workers, we see what is happening on the ground, we have nursed people that have been exposed to some of the medicines that we will assume that they are not resistant. The last thing is the issue of communication. I just want to check when I buy a tablet, I always read on the what are the counter, whatever, side effects and whatever. If that is forever in English or in Afrikaans, is it too much for it to be written in two vernacular languages that are mostly known, which is Xhosa and Zulu? Why all can I be protected? Which is my last. I'm saying each and every packet of a drug is either in English or in Afrikaans, and we have got our people that are in rural areas that are being prescribed these medicines, which they just drink without taking them. I hope I haven't asked you some of the questions that may not be relevant now, or that they may be a bit. You won't be able to answer them because there is this factor of the restructuring part of it. Thank you, Chair.
The progeria question probably is not only for you. We'll try and assist you in the progeria question. Now, can I request something, member? We're just respecting the visitors that we invited. They've asked their questions. Even the three questions per person is not going to be. We're not going to do it today. So we're going to ask questions as we want, only for today. But can I request that we just go for tea now? The tea is ready, just for 10 minutes, and then we come back. It's going to be health all the way. So you'll be getting questions from health now, but you'll answer all of them together, except the projector that we'll answer together. Okay, thank you.